He's got a beautiful backswing.
Dad, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know?
What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the 73rd Hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams back with you one day after recapping the end of the PGA Tour season to preview the start of the new PGA Tour season. After our break here in a little while, we will give you our full Safeway Open preview where friend of the show Taylor Gooch will be teeing it up. Phil Mickelson, Sergio Garcia, Jordan Spieth, several names out at Safeway this week. But first, we have got a great guest this morning. Due to rave reviews after his first appearance on the show, we have brought back legendary Oklahoma swing instructor Steve Ball. Steve joins us now. Steve, what's going on?
Morning, guys. Not much. Cool weather for a change.
It is cool weather for a change. It's kind of nice sneaking up here in the middle of all these 85 and 90 degree days. So, Steve, last time you were on, we got into a lot of stuff, and we got rave reviews the last time you came on with us, all the stuff that we kind of got into. So want to get into some more stuff today to kind of help the amateur player. But first, I want to talk about kind of your stuff that you're doing with Taylor Gooch. I know last week I brought my dad out and saw you last Wednesday, and you said that you were going to meet with Taylor the following day. I know that he had kind of, you know, I hope he enjoyed his PGA Tour offseason, which for him was all of about a week before I'm sure he was on a plane to Napa for the Safeway this week. But I'm just curious what y'all were working on last week and kind of where his game's at.
Well, we did spend a bit of time together, but, yeah, he's played so good. He's had such a great year. I mean, considering he took, what, 2 months off in the middle of the season, and he still finished 60th on the FedEx list and all that kind of stuff, made a whole bunch of money. It was one of those deals that I saw him hit, and I was like, you know what? If it's not broke, let's don't fix it. He was working. He found some things that worked really good for him toward the end of the season, mostly involving tempo and slowing things down a little bit with his driver. And oddly enough, this is a good thought for a lot of your listeners. He had a great driving week the last 2 weeks of the season, and we were talking about it, and I said, what's going on? He said, well, I'm swinging the driver a little bit slower. I said, well, if you had to put a number on it, 80%, 70%, what was it? He said, really, about like 75%. I said, wow, that's slower than most guys would say. I asked him, have you looked at your ball speed? Because they get all the numbers with the track man on each tee box on the tour that you can. If you look on the PGA Tour app, click on the 3D, the little red 3D button. It shows you some really great graphics that I'm referring to here. But I said, did you notice your ball speed? He said, no, I haven't looked yet. And I said, it's like within 1 mile an hour of where you were when you were swinging what you felt like much harder. So, so all you amateurs out there, you don't need to be jumping out of your shoes to generate speed. It would help to have a great golf swing like Taylor does. But he said he ended up feeling like he was hitting his driver with the same pace and tempo as he would a 7-iron, which is, I think, a great thought because the best drivers of all that I've seen look like they have touch and feel with their driver as though they were hitting iron. Now, they're swinging hard at it, but they're very much, and here's a key word for you guys, they're very much under control. They're not swinging easy, but they're swinging with control and a purpose. And so it's working great for him right now. And so we played a few holes at Oak Tree National, and I videoed a couple swings and looked at it. I showed him, said, man, it looks awesome. I love what you're doing with it and thinking about it. You're getting ready to start the season up, so let's just go with it, and we'll take a look down the road and see what we need to do.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the way to go, Steve. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, for sure. And I find it interesting that Taylor started to have more success with his driver when he started to swing at what he felt like was slower at the ball. Whenever you see people like Bryson and DJ, who just won $15 million, looks like they're swinging 130, 130% every single time. And so I find that very interesting. But yeah, very true, because if you're not in, it's like Tiger said, me and Colby, I was talking about it, swing as hard as you can while staying in balance and hitting the center of the club head. And if you can accomplish those two things, you're going to do pretty well. And one thing I was curious about, Steve, because you had worked with Taylor, and I know that, it, like you mentioned, they took 2 to 3 months off because of the corona. So it's such a weird year. But just out of curiosity, you know, how did Taylor evaluate his season? I know, obviously, getting to the FedEx Cup, getting the top 70 is such a huge accomplishment. How did you guys get into that? You know, how did he look back on his year? Did he see it as a success? Did he see it as, well, he didn't get a win in there, so he's really wanting to get that done? How did he look on this last season, and kind of what are some of his goals going towards this new season? Kind of like we joked about, the off season was about 10 days long.
Yeah. And you golfers always have good questions. That's a really good one there. Of course, we looked at the FedEx stuff, and that was a modicum of success there. Getting a win is the next level up for him. But really, he looks at things a lot more in the word we always refer to as a process. Is your process good? Are you getting your workouts in every day? Are you doing all your stuff on a daily basis? Are you learning good stuff each week? And boy, in the playoffs, he learned a lot. He got a lot of stuff in that, and he feels like he's trending in the right direction, which, you know, his season supports that. He was, tied for first at one event, had some top 10 finishes, 60th at FedEx. So he feels like he's getting better every year, and he's going in the right direction. He might have found some stuff with his driver. I'm telling you guys, with him, as good as he is with his irons and putter, if he starts getting the ball in play, and I may have told you this last time, he said, if I could hit 2 more fairways a day, he said, I would be one of the best in the world. I'd be high up on the list, just hitting 2 more fairways a day. So, you look at the last month or so, definitely better that way. He's trending that direction. He works on that a lot. And so I think if you'd asked him, he thought he had a great year. No doubt. I mean, he was close to making it to the Tour Championship, so that was a good year.
Yeah, it was awesome to watch him succeed. And like you said, some of those 36-hole co-leads that he had, I think it might have been at the 3M, somewhere like that. Here somewhat recently, he had a co-lead after 36 holes. So we're really rooting for him and hoping that he can get a trophy here in this 2020-2021 PGA Tour season. But I want to kind of shift the conversation to something you and I were talking about last week whenever me and my dad came over for my dad to get a swing lesson from you. And I was just kind of asking you about the bodies on the PGA Tour. And obviously Bryson is the one who's really going out of his way to really exaggerate and put on 30, 40 pounds once he's already in his mid-20s, which is not easy to do. What do you think of the body transformation of Bryson? And if that could start a domino effect on the PGA Tour as far as more guys trying to bulk up and hit it further, just the bomb and gouge style of play, if you will.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens, what the tour players, some of the tour players look like come January, start of the new season, because they finished the playoffs. They've got some majors going on. It's a little bit of an unusual off season, so they won't have as much time in the off season. But I think it'll be interesting to see which ones. Let's say they've got probably 2 months, maybe, to do stuff. Well, 2 months, you can change your body quite a bit if you get after it like he did. So it'll be interesting to see which one of them show up in January at the start of the season and have bulked up a little bit. I think everybody's going to have to make a decision on their own on that. Taylor is not in that school. I've asked him, I said, you're going to change your training stuff up. He's got a phenomenal trainer out of Jupiter, Florida that we use. And I said, you're going to change up your training and get after it. He said, nope. He said, I like where I'm at. He said, I've been injury-free for the last 3 years. It lets me do what I want to. I'm playing better every year. I'm not gonna chase that deal. Now, what Bryce will end up doing, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see how his body holds up. That's the question everybody's asking, but I've heard him talk about it. I know he's doing a lot of flexibility stuff, which would be absolutely paramount. If you're going to put on that much weight and try to bulk up, you better maintain some flexibility. So I know he's addressing that. Whether that's a trend, you know what? It's the distance is definitely a trend. Maybe how you get there might be different, but, you know, you see guys like Cameron Champ that's, 134 club head speed. I think the last time I saw it, Dustin Johnson is 127 club head speed. So, DeChambeau and Tony Finau, they're probably up there in those range, 130 range, someplace like that. So, that has got to be intriguing to other players to see the advantages at times those players have. Not all the time, but when they rip off a big drive or something, those other players got to be looking at it and thinking, is this going to be, you know, where I need to be? And I would say this, that the days of, oh, the Corey Pavin type players, those kind of guys, I just don't think you're going to see very many of those guys on tour anymore. I just don't think they can't keep up enough of those guys. So it's going to be a distance trend of some sort. How they get there remains to be seen.
Yeah, we kind of made an analogy one of our last few shows, Steve, kind of like the NBA. You know, you hear about your Muggsy Bogues, your J.J. Barea, as your Spud Webbs, those guys who are below 6 feet tall, but you constantly hear about them because they're the only people to ever do it. And I feel like that's kind of where the PGA Tour is going, where, you know, like the Zach Johnsons and Corey Pavin, like you mentioned, those guys, Fred Funk, the guys who are just straight and accurate. I think we're going to see those are going to become more minimal as we get going on, as only 125 people, including plus two year plus winners have their tour cards, so not very many people out there. And you know, going on the same line of working out, Steve, because one of the things we talked a long session last time when we had you on was about TPI and how fitness and everything has gone into the game. And so have you noticed anything in your TPI instruction, or just anything from maybe some of your junior players? Like, I know you're working with one of the best juniors in the country, Ryder Cowan, and some of those other players. Have you noticed anything on your end, or even from some of your other players wanting to kind of get into that and get, just have you seen intrigue from your side of it, or have you, any of your TPI training, have you seen anything change since we've kind of seen over the last year, 18 months or so, really this distance take a whole new leap?
Yeah. Have you played with some of those guys, Taylor or Cole? Have you guys seen some of these kids hit it?
Man, I've seen Ryder hit some balls before. I've never played 18 holes with them. Sean, his dad, and my dad are real good family friends. Yeah, okay. So yeah, they grew up together a lot. So, but no, I've only seen Ryder hit balls, and I almost feel like I got to pay to go out and watch that kid from all the stories I hear.
Well, funny you'd ask, because he was out. I just was with him last night. He came out, and we spent an hour together doing mostly club fitting stuff. But that's kind of what happened. The TPI stuff we refer to, for your listeners that don't know, TPI stands for Titleist Performance Institute. And they've got a website, like everybody does. It's called MyTPI.com. And if you're a golfer and you want to know anything about golf, not just, I mean, anything, club fitting, nutrition, working out, biomechanics, all that stuff, it is phenomenal website. You'll go nuts with this website. You'll be on it for days, okay? So they did research 20 years ago in why the tour players are who they are, and their ranges of motion and their training and their strength, all that kind of stuff. So then they started developing a curriculum that they would teach golf professionals like me that wanted to learn it, what's going on with it. Well, through that process, they got involved with the best people in the world that did junior training. And now then, we've known this. Well, I've been in this about this for like 20 years. So I'm sure that a lot of the players on tour right now that you're seeing, if they were with a good instructor, their instructor got into TPI stuff as well, and they show up to their junior players. So, yes, Ryder Cowan, I've talked about it a lot, and he's about to get into a phase where he's going to start building strength really fast. Now, last night, he was 161 ball speed on TrackMan. Ryder weighs 110 pounds. And he has 161 miles an hour ball speed, which is 8 miles an hour faster than he was about 6 or 8 months ago, the last time I measured him, okay? So they have taught us how to train kids at an early age, beginning at age 6, to develop speed. And parents, if you're listening, you've got young kids that maybe they're going to be golfers, maybe not, just any kind of an athletic movement. They need to know this stuff that TPI knows. And this is how we teach our junior camps, to make kids run fast and throw and jump and be athletic. Because if you look at the tour players, I mean, look, Dustin Johnson's a good example, 36-inch vertical leap. And look what kind of speed he's got. So that's all you need to know about that right there, that if the kids can jump and be athletic, they're going to swing the golf club fast. And I'm going to say it again, parents, you've got to get your kids trained this way when they're young, before growth spurts. Girls will start to grow about age 10. Boys will start to grow 12 to 14. Kind of depends on the parents, how tall they are, how much you're going to grow. But you want to start measuring and tracking your kids' growth velocity because after they quit growing, they will build strength really fast. But before that, they need to be developed some athletic movement patterns such as speed and agility and balance and explosive movement. So simple things like have them run 20-yard sprints, okay, and just measure, see how fast they can run. And then, you know, tell them, okay, this time you ran a 4.2-second 20-yard sprint. Let's see if we can do 4.1 next time. And keep baiting them to run faster. Playing tag is great for kids. Throwing balls, how far can they throw a ball, is awesome. And any kind of jump stuff. So that's why you're seeing some of the young tour players now hit it so far because, again, we've known about TPI curriculum for 20 years, and we know how to train kids. And so you're seeing the tip of the iceberg right now. But as you might imagine, guess what's behind that coming up through the ranks? The Ryder Cavs that fly at 275 weighs 110 pounds. A rider's 14 years old, 15 years old, no, 15 years old. And the kids like him, and other kids there, Drew Goodman from Norman, an OU commit. He's about 175 ball speed as an 18-year-old. So we know how to train the kids early on, and parents, it sounds dramatic, but if you don't do it with the kids when they're young, before the growth spurts, it's too late. You've lost your chance to make the kids fast. So heed that, and look at the TPI website.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point there, Steve. And I remember listening to the Tour Championship broadcast this last week, and they were talking about Scotty Scheffler, who actually he finished second in the gross portion of the Tour Championship. So he would have finished second had not been for the points. And they said that in between his junior and senior year of high school, or somewhere around that point, he grew over a foot in height. And so he was, I imagine someone like yourself as a club fitter having this great junior for however long, then all of a sudden you're having to give him a new set of clubs, which seems like every week, because he just keeps growing and growing and growing. And, go ahead.
It would be interesting to ask him sometime, if you get him on or talk to somebody, what happened to his speed after he quit growing?
Yes.
I'll tell you what, probably he got awkward when he grew, because that's the other thing, parents, if you're listening. When your kids are growing, they're going to get really awkward. When they grow, and they one leg grows one day, and then the right arm grows, and then after they quit growing, man, the strength window kicks in, and they'll pick up 50 or 60 yards.
Oh boy! And then then they love the game a lot more after that, for sure. There's no doubt about that. And so going along with this training thing, a lot of you've seen it, especially with the other sports. Like we talk about the NBA, there's the cryotherapy and all that with the ice chamber and all that. And you see almost every PGA Tour player now is wearing a Whoop device to track their recovery stuff. And so have you seen it either with Taylor or Junior's other players, anything like that? What is kind of like post-round recovery process? Because even back when I was a junior 10 years ago, my recovery process was to go to Whataburger and get a large burger, fries, and Coke, and I don't think that's the way to do it anymore.
Taylor used the Whoop bracelet for a while, and he got tuned. He got pretty much tuned in to what his body was doing and needed, and so he doesn't use it anymore. He says it's pretty simple. Once you kind of know, you can kind of figure it out. So he does it more or less on his own. You know what I worry about with the kids is burnout around here. I know it's a that word's old and overused probably, but in our world around here, kids will start playing high school golf, as you guys know, in January. Now, the weather's not great, but they start competing, right, qualifying, getting ready for high school golf in a normal season, not with the virus stuff around, but they'll start in January, and now they can play all the way through the end of October. So that's 10 months, 10 months of competitive season. No serious athlete competes for 10 months. Taylor Gooch doesn't. The NBA doesn't. NFL doesn't. You know, so I'm concerned with that with kids of playing so long that they get either repetitive use injuries or playing too much golf. You know, it gets to be hard on your back. And Taylor Gooch went through that for a while in college. He was one period he was traveling a lot and practicing and working on his driver, hitting lots of balls, and after about 3 or 4 weeks, he started having some back issues just from repetitive use injuries. So you kind of got to watch and listen to your body and know what it can handle. But I tell all the kids, man, you don't need to play for 10 months. Let's take a break. In fact, Ryder Cowan and I were talking about last night with his mom that he's going to what's he going to do this fall? So, well, he's going to play, you know, some an invitational and some other things and so forth. I said, okay, well, that's 10 months worth of competitive season this year. Ryder, you need to listen to your body. If you start to hurt or you start to get kind of tired and lethargic and maybe not wanting to play, then put the clubs up. Go rest up. I mean, other kids, the kids freak out thinking, oh, my gosh, if I rest a couple weeks in the summer, I'm going to lose it or somebody's going to pass me or whatever. That is not the case. I mean, just watch the tour guys. Just see how they'll play. I think Taylor Gooch feels pretty good about playing 4 or 5 weeks in a row. He feels like he plays pretty good the third, fourth, maybe the fifth week. And after that, he needs a break. So he'll come home for usually 2 weeks. He said a week at home is really not much because it takes a day travel to get here and then a day to go to the next place. And so it's just a short 4 or 5 days, actually, that they're doing that stuff. So he does it for that kind of period. But juniors, you guys be careful and just watch out for that 10-month season.
Yeah, DJ, even Dustin Johnson, said that during the break, the COVID break, which was 3-4 months, whatever it was, he said he barely touched his clubs, barely played at all during the break. And we kind of saw that at the TaylorMade driving relief where he was very rusty, didn't play very well. Yeah. And he said that what he was trying to do was get his body back right so that he could be good to go for the home stretch. And as it turns out, Dustin Johnson knew exactly what he was doing, and he got his body right, and then the game came along with it, and now he's playing better golf than anybody in the world. Steve,
look what they got coming up. I mean, they got the Tour Champion, the playoffs, U.S. Open, the Masters. If somebody got hot for this 6-week period, like maybe he is, I mean, you could make an entire, you could make a Hall of Fame career here in the next 6 weeks.
Yeah, from August 1st through the middle of November, you can make a legitimate Hall of Fame career. Because of the way all these tournaments are put in.
And you change your bank account, too. DJ just added 15 mil to it, so with the 72-hole week. So.
Yeah, not a bad week there for DJ.
How would your guys' swings look with 15 mil on the line?
I wouldn't have hit that iron. I don't know if you saw it, Steve, but on that 15th hole at East Lake, that island green, to like 220 yards, DJ just ripped like a 4 or 5 iron, just 10 feet right of the flag. And, I mean, my heart rate and my man genitalia area would have been so far up my stomach, I wouldn't have known what to do.
Yeah, my ball would have been in the water almost as soon as I struck it, I think. Almost as soon as
I struck it. It probably helps to have... You know, if you got millions in the bank already, you've had his career already.
It's all
that might take a little heat off of it. But still, I heard him say that this would be a big deal in his playing resume to have the Tour Championship on there. So I think it was a bigger deal to him to win this than the 15 million part was. But still, I mean, hitting those shots with that kind of pressure, that's big time.
Yeah, yeah, very big time. So we've now talked about elite-level tour players, guys like Taylor Gooch you work with. We've talked about elite junior players, guys like Ryder Cowan you've worked with. Let's talk about a man in his 50s who fights a slice. So came out and saw you last week, Steve. It was a week ago today. Brought my dad out. It's what I got him for his birthday. He's been wanting to take a lesson, but he was never going to get around to it by himself. So I got him a lesson for his birthday. We come out there, and you worked on some things with him. So I'm curious if you want to kind of talk to people a little bit about what he was fighting. And is that kind of common, what you see most amateurs fight and some of the common mistakes that those guys make?
Very common. So I'll just give you backgrounds a little bit, or your listeners a little bit of a background here. He's hitting mostly kind of a thin hit, not much of a divot, and the curve of the shot was kind of trending to the right. So kind of thin fades. Is that about right, Colby? Is that pretty good?
Yeah.
Pretty close?
I think fade is a polite way. It's a polite word for a slice.
All right, so he was hitting a thin slice. So now then, about 90% of your listeners are on board with us. They can identify with this, okay? That's about how many of you guys hit thin shots that curve to the slice side of the target, all right? So what we worked on, and here's what I call the gold medal for golf, and I told you guys this that day you're out here. If you can get a divot after impact and the ball curving to the left, divot after impact and the ball curving to the left, that is the gold medal for golf. So if you're aspiring, any of you golfers are aspiring to be good or to get better or to really make a big leap, chase that right there, a divot after impact and a curve. So what we did with him, with Kobe's dad, was to get him to drag his hands forward, your hands, and if you look at any video of any good player, 100% they're like this, the shaft is leaning forward, their hands are ahead of the ball, and their lead wrist, in this case, a right-handed golfer is going to be his left wrist, is bowed out. And the shaft is leaning forward, that's going to make it easier for them to hit the ball first. So ball first, ground second, and then we worked on getting him to turn. I gave him a tip of let your knuckles on the back of your left hand turn down. So the two things there were drag your hand past the ball and turn your knuckles down. And that will produce a divot after impact and a draw. And so we started out, Kobe was really slow swings to what I said, let's hit it like 50 yards, something like that. So no speed to it whatsoever. And he flushed several of them. And it was amazing to him. I mean, the ball flew like 100 yards or 115, 20 yards, something like that, wasn't it, Kobe?
Yeah, it's really interesting. We went to the course right after that, and we played 18. And the biggest problem he's having, and he texted me the other day, the biggest problem he's having now is about one out of every three shots or so, he hits perfect, and he flushes with a divot. And now he has no idea how to control his distance because he's been scooping the golf ball for so long. He's not compressing the ball. He's getting no distance. So he said he was hitting his gap wedge 80 yards, and now he's hitting his gap wedge about 105 when he hits it good. So he said the thing he's having the most trouble with is flying the ball over the green whenever he hits it good.
That is a really good problem to have.
That's what I'm talking
about. Don't back off of that. And that's what happens. If somebody sticks with this, that's exactly what happens. They'll hit one out of five really good, and it goes too far. And now they're a little confused. I said, you know what, keep doing it, because you'd have to hit a ball really far over a green to get it into trouble. Most of the trouble is in front of greens. So I tell my players, keep doing what you're doing. It'll start to even out a little bit. Keep doing this, and if it flies over the pin a little bit and flies to the back of the green, awesome, because it feels so good when you hit it like that. So the next thing with him, and there's the other thing I would work on with players, is I'd work on drivers, and we talk about that. Maybe the next time we're going to work on some drivers, and I'll get TrackMan out, and I'll measure how far his driver goes when he slices it. And with him, Kobe, I bet you we'd pick up 30, 40 yards easily. With, let's say it was easily 30 yards. Well, he just said his gap wedge is going from 80 to 105. So that's a 25-yard increase in an iron, which is pretty big. So easily that's going to mean 30 yards with a driver, probably closer to 40. So now look, if you add those two numbers together on a par four, you've got two swings. Okay, I hit my irons 25 yards further. My driver's going to go 30 yards further. That's 55 yards more distance to him on a par four. Where he was hitting driver 5-iron, he's going to be in driver 9 or driver wedge now. You think that's not a big advantage for golfers? And so, I don't know if I told him the other day, but I tell players all the time when we do this, and a lot of time it's senior players that are starting to lose it, and they think it's because of age, when really it's mostly because of poor golf swing hitting slices. But I've told hundreds of players, getting the ball to draw, especially with a driver, if you've been slicing, so now you can start to draw it, keeps your golf game young. Now think about those words. Keeps your whole golf game young, because you can pick up 30 or 40 yards, maybe 15, 20 yards with an iron, and now you're back to hitting it like you were maybe when you were, you know, a lot younger. But it makes golf a lot more fun like that. So getting the ball to draw, and if you can get a divot with an iron, is the gold medal. It's magic.
Yeah, that's a really good quote there, Steve. Keeps your golf game young. I hope you don't have that copyrighted. I might have to use that from time to time. And, you know, luckily I know Colby's dad, Joe, and he's a very patient man, so he's going to be able to kind of work through some of these kinks. And
yeah,
kind of David into it last time we were on. You know, the typical amateur, they'll come see you one time, and like Colby's dad, Joe, he's hitting one out of three shots right now, when before he was hitting one out of probably seven or eight, right? And your typical amateur comes and sees you, and they don't want to hit it one out of three times perfect. They want to hit it perfect every single time. And so, you know, for someone like you as an instructor who's seen it so much, and even from our end, how much work you need to put in, you know, just kind of translate onto these people, what, no matter really what skill level they're at, really just the type of work and dedication you need to get into. I mean, we see it with Tiger from 97 to basically the middle of 99. He was working on his swing and only won one time in the greatest career of all time. So just kind of elaborate on what, on how these amateurs need to really handle these kind of swing changes in the process that they're going through.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I read something a long time ago I thought made a lot of sense, and I tell to players all the time, I said, look at your improvement with your golf game in terms of a compass and not a clock. And what that infers is, if you go by the clock thing, that player will say, well, Steve, how soon can I knock off 10 shots? Or how soon will I get good hitting draws? How fast can I get this fixed? Well, they're setting themselves up for failure there. I mean, they're putting a lot of pressure on themselves. I think they're going to fix really quick, and kind of what you were alluding to, it just doesn't happen that way. And you guys both are fully aware of that. So I say, instead of that, let's look at with a compass. I don't know when you're going to get to your goal, but I know if you keep going this direction and fight through some of the bad days and keep doing what we're telling you to do, eventually you'll get there. Now, with players, I want to make sure they've got some things matched up. So is their goal realistic? So let's say Joe said, okay, I want to quit slicing. Okay, great. How often do you play? How often do you practice? And Kobe, I can't remember what he plays quite a bit, doesn't he? He practices some too?
Yeah,
is that right?
He tries to go over and play about once or twice a week. It's tough for him. He lives in Chickasha. He's got the nine hole there where he's a member. So he goes and plays more than he practices because there's not not a driving range. So it's kind of tough right there.
That's okay. You can still do it on the golf course. So I might say, okay, you're going to play twice a week, and we want to just simply quit slicing, okay? So let's allow several months, something like that. I can't really predict the learning curve, but as opposed to a guy that says, I really don't like to practice, you know, and I want to quit slicing, can you fix me? Well, I always get them fixed during the lesson. I always get rid of a slice, 100%. We get rid of it every time. Now, do they stick with it? How long are they going to practice? That kind of stuff. That's what they've got to match up and be realistic about. But if they're like Joe and he doesn't like to hit golf balls, then I've got a lot of students that are like that. I said, hey, you can learn to do this on the golf course. You might go play in the mornings early or late in the days and maybe play by yourself and hit two or three balls on each shot and practice aiming at real targets on the golf course. So as long as they've got a realistic expectation and a time frame set up, with the compass thing, okay, I'm not sure when I'm going to fully get rid of the slice. I'm not sure when I'm going to, you know, get to my score objective. But I know if I keep going this direction, I'll get there. And I'll tell you what they all say. All of them, and I just had a guy yesterday come in, said the same thing. If they stick with it, they will say, just like this guy did yesterday, said, you know what, I'm starting to hit some better shots. Maybe not all the time, and I'm starting to hit better shots that I couldn't hit before. And he said, then the next day I had nine straight holes where I made bogeys. He said, I've never done that before. So I had a string of holes where he said, I had a string of holes where I played pretty good. And then he said one of the important things. He said, you know what? My bad shots aren't nearly as bad as they were before. I said, you just nailed the three things that golfers always tell me what they're doing in their game when they stick with it. They're starting to hit better shots. They can see them maybe just on the range. And then you go to the golf course and you hit a few more good shots, like Joe did, hit some gap wedges over the greens. He didn't have that shot before. And my bad ones aren't very bad. So golfers, that's what just about everybody tells me that sticks with. They go through that progression right there. And I tell them, so, you know, they'll come in all the time and say, you know, Steve, I'm so inconsistent. Guy, I hit my gap wedge 105 yards the other day. What's going on? I said, well, you know what? You couldn't do that before. At least you got that shot in your bag now occasionally. So I understand being inconsistent because it's a new move. You're just not used to it yet. But kind of celebrate and enjoy those little victories that, hey, look what I can do. And then, like this guy yesterday came in and told me that. It's his fourth lesson he's had. And he said, I made nine holes in a row with a bogey. I didn't lose any golf balls. I hit some better shots. And I told him simply, and it's a pretty drastic swing change he's going through. I simply told him, you know what? Whatever you did, however you practiced from the last lesson, keep doing it. Don't quit because you think you had a little success. Keep doing what you're doing. And I may have told you guys last time when I go out on tour with Taylor, you know, I'm constantly amazed when I go to the putting green, all the gadgets and stuff that are on the putting green, putting tracks and chalk lines and mirrors and kind of all the stuff that most of the golf courses, most instructors around here would probably use. Well, guess what? These guys are doing the same thing week in and week out. I can go around the putting green and see the marks on the green on a tour event where the chalk lines were, where a magic marker was drawn, or where a putting device was set up, and I know which player had been there practicing because he was using the same stuff he was 4 months ago the last time I was out there. So now, viewers and listeners, think about that. Here's the best people in the world. The elite players in the whole world, and they are sticking with the same simple gadgets, routines, practice drills, whatever, week in and week out. Most, to your point, Taylor, most of you guys try it for a little while, a little success, and then on to something else.
That's normally what happens. That's normally what happens, Steve. And you're exactly right. Just get that compass and get you kind of a roadmap going where you know, just don't expect things too soon, I guess would be the way to phrase it. Just be kind of realistic about it. And I think you made a really good point, because I think a lot of kind of the average golfer gets it misconstrued, because, you know, you mentioned these amateur golfers limiting their mistakes. And you'll look, a couple weeks ago, DJ shot 30 under at TBC Boston. So everyone thinks, oh, well, you know, you just got to make a lot of birdies out there. Well, I tell you what, to get to 30 under, you're not making very many bogeys either, you know? So that's really, in my opinion, that is the most important thing, is had he made 10 or 15 bogeys, he wouldn't have shot 30 under, he would have shot 15 under. You know, those birdies wouldn't have mattered.
Right. Taylor Gooch told me that was not a 30 under par golf course either.
It didn't look like it from our end. It looked like he was playing an entirely different
one. Nobody else in the field was it, a 30 under par golf course.
And Taylor asked me, said, how many did he win by? And I thought it was kind of funny. Taylor didn't look at the results. And I said, well, he won by 11. 1,900 was second place. He said, see there? The whole rest of the field, 1,900 was the best they could do. He said, I told you it was not a 30-under par golf course.
Yeah, it's crazy how low some of the elites can go whenever they really get it rolling. Steve, obviously, I mean, everybody listening knows, you clearly know what you're talking about here. Everybody call the Ball Golf Center. It's at 7501 North Robinson here in Oklahoma City. Give them a call, 405-842-2626. 842-2626. Get an appointment scheduled today. Go out and see our guy, Steve. Steve, you are the man. We appreciate you taking some time for us this morning and hope you enjoy these few days of cool weather before it heats back up.
Thank you, guys. Great questions. Love talking with you.
Much love, Steve. Thank you again.
Absolutely. Tell Taylor good luck this week in California from us.
Will do.
All right. Good stuff. That was Steve Ball, gracious enough to join us once again here on the 73rd hole. Always love having Steve on, getting his insight. Hope everyone listens and learns a little bit whenever we bring on one of Oklahoma's best. We're going to take a break, come back on the other side, and completely break down the Safeway Open, getting the PGA Tour season underway. It's been two whole days without golf. It's been absolutely brutal. So we'll get the PGA Tour season started tomorrow out in California. Should be a lot of fun. We preview it next on the 73rd hole.
When something the size of a golf ball hits your roof, you need to call McRae Roofing. McRae Roofing is Oklahoma's designer roofing service specialist. For years, Jeff McRae and the experienced team at McRae Roofing and Exteriors have served fellow Oklahomans by helping them with their roofing needs. McRae Roofing uses only top quality materials and professional crews to make sure that each job is done right, so it will give you the years of service, security, and protection you need from the unpredictable Oklahoma weather. McRae Roofing offers residential and commercial roofing, ventilation services, and custom copper designs. McRae Roofing is dedicated to exceeding the homeowner's expectations. It's not just a roof, it is your home's crowning glory. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000. Make sure to also visit their website at mcraeroofing.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y roofing.com. Don't get caught with a leaking roof. Contact McRae Roofing for your free inspection today.
Welcome back. Rolling along here on the 73rd hole on a Wednesday, the day before the start of the PGA Tour season. Big day tomorrow. PGA Tour season gets underway. NFL season gets underway. One of those packing a little more intensity than the other, probably because we've been waiting 9 months for a football game and we've been waiting 2 days for a golf tournament. Taylor, it is, first off, shout out again, Steve Ball. Steve's the absolute best. Y'all go check
that,
him out.
That was a great conversation there. Man, he gave so much great insight on, I mean, just, there's two, you know, I mean, obviously there's different levels to the game, but he gave so much on, like, what Taylor, PGA Tour player, is doing. Ryder Cowan, one of the best junior players in the country, if not the world. And then he went down with someone like your dad, who's an 18 handicap, working his way up to be, hopefully, in the single digits before too long. So we really hit every single type of golfer out there.
Yeah, no doubt. So great stuff from Steve. Really appreciate him joining us. And now we turn our sights to the Safeway Open, which, look, I love that we have golf this week. It's really tough to get fired up for, I'm calling this the sandwich tournament, because we've got the bread, and the bread is the Tour Championship and the U.S. Open. And the Safeway being in the middle here is basically like if you just had a sandwich that was lettuce and mayonnaise. It's just, it's, and it's no knock against these guys, it's no knock against the golf course. A lot of great players in this tournament. good golf course, fun tournament. It's just so hard to get fired up for it whenever it gets sandwiched in between the Tour Championship and the U.S. Open.
Absolutely. I mean, we make the analogy of in like college football, you have that kind of trap game where, like, for example, as OU fans, it'd be like having Texas, and then in 2 weeks having OSU, and then in the middle of that having Kansas. And I mean, I'm not obviously there's great players in this field and tremendous golfers. It's just kind of the expectations you have when you're going from a tournament that pays $15 million to the winner, then all of a sudden a major championship before that, and now we're at a tournament where on DraftKings, Siwoo Kim is the most expensive player in the field.
Shout out Siwoo. First time in his career, most expensive player on DraftKings.
He's been playing great. I mean, there's no
slack. I did not look that up, by the way. I'm just making a very big assumption that Siwoo has never been the most expensive
player. It would be hard to imagine. I mean, other great players, Phil Zinn, Spieth Zinn, Sergio Zinn. So a couple of guys who, obviously, Phil won the Champions Tour a couple of weeks ago, but some guys who are bigger names, but really just haven't been playing well lately. We've obviously documented Spieth forever long. Sergio, really, ever since he got that green jacket, has been kind of just enjoying life, which doesn't surprise me. You try to win a major for 20 consecutive years, can't do it, then all of a sudden it happens. Probably going to be a little relieved and, you know, just kind of enjoy life, similar to what Darren Clarke did. He probably hasn't gone a day without drinking since he won the Claret Jug.
I don't know if Darren Clarke's actually played golf since he won the Open.
Played good golf? Probably not. No. He entered a few tournaments, but he was always down at the bottom. But, hey, if you put a Claret Jug on your mantle, you can really do whatever the hell you want. But, no, we'll definitely give you some of our picks that we like, even though we don't have the DJs, the Thomases in the field. And we talked about how this tournament wouldn't draw that strong a field, and doing that, I didn't even consider the fact that the Tour Championship ended on Monday, so we know that none of these guys that played are playing this week. Especially, I mean, no one that I saw is, at least. So
I was going to say, I don't see a single name on here that was at the Tour Championship.
And you wouldn't think that'd be the case with Wingfoot being right up the road, but
a lot of names on here that were at Olympia Fields, though.
Yes. So we thought that there may have been a few names. So I do think there's a few more from there, Colby, kind of like you mentioned, that are playing. And there's good players, and, you know, and then any golf term is a money-making opportunity, not for just these players, but for us gamblers.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And one thing about this, so they're playing at Silverado Resort and Spa in the North Course this week, and it is a short golf course. It is par 72, and it measures 7,200 yards, which for these guys is mega short. And it measures that short with a 240-yard par 3, a 212-yard par 3. Both par 3s on the back are north of 180. So we've got long par 3s on a short golf course, which means there are four reachable par 5s. Taylor, the par 5s measure 538, 557, 571, and 575. Are the four par fives. You talk about scores. I mean, we're going to see some scores this week at Silverado.
Well, one thing, too, is I'm adding up the distance on those par fives, and even with those long par threes, you go through it, there can't be that many long par fours on there either. And so, like,
no, 391, 412.
If you're not over 450 yards, I mean, that's
the 17th hole's 375.
I mean, DJ last week, I know, was downhill, but 14th at East Lake, it was 512 yards. He hit driver 8-iron.
Yeah.
I mean,
424, 407, 417, 360. I mean, these are the par fours we're working with this week.
I mean, that's what I'm talking about. So, I don't have the exact course design in front of me, so I think it's going to be one of those courses where it's not going to take driver out of a lot of people's hands. I think it'll give you some options to where if you want to hit iron or some shot off the tee box to get you in play, I think you're going to be able to get it around. We kind of mentioned it with Steve Ball, how we're kind of getting away from the Corey Pavins, the Fred Funks, the Zach Johnsons. That kind of golf is kind of starting to phase out, really, just where the game's going. But a course like this, with it being shorter like that, while it's going to give so many players more of an advantage because they're going to have wedges in their hands, some of the big bombers, but it's going to give even the shorter guys, they're not going to be hitting 5-irons in, they're going to be hitting 9-irons, pitching wedges, maybe even gap wedges, which if you're on the tour and you're a short player, you're deadly with those clubs anyway. So I think it brings quite a bit of people into the tournament having a course set up like this.
Yeah, so going all the way back to 2007, I wouldn't necessarily declare this as a bombers course, but we've certainly seen it recently lend its way to the bombers. You know who the last two winners are here?
Let's see. I know Phil didn't win it. He's finished top. Did Luke List win it?
Nope.
I'm trying to think. Cameron Champ?
Cameron Champ won it last year. Another bomber won it the year before. He's totally lost his game.
Totally lost his game and a bomber. Kokrak? No, he didn't lose his game.
Oklahoma State.
Oh, my Lord. How am I not thinking of it?
Bomber from Oklahoma State. Son of a legend.
Kevin Tway
and Cameron Champ, your last two winners. Prior to that, Brendan Steele won it the both 2 years before that. And unsurprisingly, Tony Finau was the runner-up one of those years.
Oh, shocking.
Looky there. Tony Finau is a runner-up. Yeah. I bet we could pull up any event on the PGA Tour, and at some point over the last 5 years, Tony Finau was the runner-up.
Probably, more than likely, yeah. And so what you're seeing from there, Colby, what I'm seeing is that it's going more on the lines of, even more so than we thought, of just the distance taking over, because while it will bring some other people into this field, if we probably go down and look at the top 20 to 25, probably see some of the shorter guys up there. But with how many guys that hit it far, if you can get just a couple of them, like a Cameron Champ that 1 week, or Kevin Tway, who I mean, these guys can hit it 360 yards really on command. So all of a sudden you start bombing it down there, and you mentioned some of the links of those holes, Colby. I mean, if there's any type of dog leg or anything and they're able to cut the corner, all of a sudden instead of hitting a 50 to 60 yard pitch, you're chipping. And I mean, we saw that at the two-man tournament we played a few weeks ago, and even when we played our match yesterday. I mean, just getting those extra 20 to 30 yards closer just gives you so many more opportunities to get it up and down, as opposed to what some of the other guys will. So while I think it brings a lot of people into the mold, for example, like a DraftKings lineup, you'll be able to get some players who aren't necessarily bombers who will make the cut, but you get one of these guys who can just bomb it away and gets the putter rolling for 1 week, it's going to be really hard to top them, as we've seen the last 2 years with Champ and Kevin Tway.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's go ahead and fire away on our DraftKings lineups. And by the way, I've got a bone to pick. So our DraftKings pool that we pick every week, guy named Gardner runs it. Terribly nice guy. Gardner, I got to know what happened last week. I got to know what happened.
We all got in it, and we checked Friday. I got this right. Instead of Thursday, I said Friday. Yeah. We checked Friday morning.
It was gone.
And there's nothing there.
It was gone. And somebody on this show, who shall remain nameless, it was me, had Dustin Johnson and Justin Thomas in his DraftKings
lineup.
And
did not have Billy Horschel, who finished 30th.
And did not have Billy Horschel, who everyone else was going to roster.
That was a great 30th. That was a great call, by the way, on Horschel. I mean, we talked about it yesterday, but someone who played so well, only guy did not break par any of the days. You couldn't have been more right there, Colby. But yeah, go ahead and let out some more steam if you want on old Gardner. And
I mean, that was a dub.
I love Gardner, but come on now.
I mean, that was a winner coming in hot. So I don't even know. Maybe DraftKings messed up. I don't know.
That had to have been what it was.
I just need answers. I just need answers as to why maybe the greatest DraftKings lineup ever assembled didn't get to go have its day in the sunlight last week.
Well, I know it used to be where, like, if you do any of these little pools like this, anyone out there listening probably been in something like this, to where you have like a maximum amount of people who can get in. And it used to be to where if not everyone got in the maximum number, they shut the pool off. But
they changed it.
But they changed that to where all it did was just change the payout structure.
Yeah, if it's like 16 out of 19, it just changes the payout, but it doesn't totally eliminate the pool where nobody gets to play.
Yeah, so I'm not sure exactly what happened there. I don't know if it happened to anyone else out there who was listening, any of their other pools, something similar may have happened. But yeah, you had a great lineup, Colby, and it didn't count. Too bad, so sad. Makes up for your two horrible picks at the Northern Trust. At least one of them worked out for you the week after.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a very good point. It all evens out in the end. So heading over to DraftKings now, and we'll go most expensive to cheapest, and I'll start us out. My most expensive is at $10,000, and that is
copycat
your boy who everyone's going to roster this week, and there is no week not to, no reason not to, because he loves him some Napa, California. It's Brendan Steele. We just talked about it.
Oh, I know. Yeah, and you know what was bad was that I was debating on who I was going to pick in our one-and-done pools, and I was looking on, and I was like, oh, Brendan Steele, he'll be a good pick. I used him at the stupid Barracuda where he finished 53rd in some opposite field event. Like, gosh dang it. And so now I'm going to have to run out a different guy, but I still like him. And so definitely we're copying the most expensive there. So since we're doing Snake, I'll go ahead and go second. Really not much more to say about Brendan Steele. Over the last, I think you have the recent course history in front of you there, Colby. Always played well here. But over the last few tournaments, finished 33rd at the BMW, 44th at the Northern Trust, 22nd at the PGA Championship, at the Barracuda where I picked and finished 53rd. But then before that, finished 13th at the Memorial, which we talked about with how hard the setup was. And then even a couple weeks before that, finished 6th at the Traveler. So a guy on good form and has played good at this course. I mean, how can you argue with that? I mean, it's just hard to.
Yep, absolutely.
And then so my next most expensive guy, he tends to play well every week. I don't pick him. and every week I do pick him, he plays bad, so this is probably the off week. But he's a popular name. I've seen him thrown out there by a lot of guys, and I like the guy's demeanor he was on. He filled in for Max Homa.
Where you were headed. Yeah,
so I'll go with old Joe Damon. I really like his game. I like his demeanor. Finished 20th at the BMW last tournament. Finished 10th at the PGA Championship. 20th at the FedEx St. Jude. And so at 9,500, it's, like I said, a little bit weaker field, so you kind of have to figure out how to disperse your money how you want, or your salary cap, I guess would be the way to phrase it, disperse how you want it. And so I'm going with a guy who is very steady in Joe Damon. He shot 58 over the Corona, so we know he has the opportunity to go low. And then Brendan Steele, a guy who's playing well now and played a good course. So I'm going with two guys that I consider to be not surefire bets, but about as close as you can get.
So I had it narrowed down to, for my second most expensive, to either Ches Reavy or Joel Damon. And I ended up going with Reavy. I just went and looked
at... I love Reavy this week, too. Yep,
I went and looked at course history. Joel Damon's played here 3 times. He's got 2 missed cuts and a 46th. Ches Reavy's played here 6 times, has made the cut all 6 times, despite never top 10-ing, which I found a little bit surprising. But Ches Reavy playing pretty good golf. We know he's capable of winning on the PGA Tour. The fact that this is not a real long golf course, I think, lends itself more to a guy like Ches Reavy. So hopefully, you know, he's known as one of the biggest tinkerers on the PGA Tour. He plays a new set of 14 clubs several different times a week, apparently. Yeah. And then he goes back to all reliable for all the tournaments.
Yeah, and Reavy, like you mentioned, Colby, hasn't missed a cut here since 2013, and so I don't think he's ever missed a cut here. And then hasn't played well the last couple weeks, but before that, finished 6th at the St. Jude, and then the 2 tournaments at Muirfield Venice, finished 22nd and 17th. So might have had a little bit of a hiatus there, but going back to a course where he has good history at, I think he's going to play well this week.
Yeah, and another guy who's been playing well, is my third most expensive, is Tyler Duncan. Down at 8,400. A little more expensive this week.
Doesn't that show you where it was at? What was it? In the PGA Championship, some of the other events, we were getting Tyler Duncan 6,500, 6,400.
Yeah. 6,300. 6,300
even sometimes. Yeah. And, I mean, obviously that goes to show the strength of field this week, but also, too, just shows how well he's been playing.
Yes, yeah, Tyler Duncan's been playing really well. 16 to 25 cuts made in the previous PGA Tour season, so I think he'll make the cut. I think he even probably has a chance to contend, obviously, if he plays well. If he doesn't play well, no chance. But 2018, he finished top 5 here. He's made the cut the last 2 years despite finishing outside the top 50. So I like the fact that he has a little bit of good course history here to pull on. So that's my third most expensive, is Tyler Duncan.
Awesome. Like I said, we've liked Duncan all year, and he's finally starting to get a little bit of respect on DraftKings.
Better so, Duncan, Tyler or Oklahoma?
Definitely Tyler.
Sorry, Duncan. It's definitely Tyler.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and I know a lot of really good guys from Duncan, but we're going with Tyler Duncan on that one for sure because we were rivals in high school, so we do have to.
Yes.
So now let me see here. I've gone off my top 2. It's not in order. So third most expensive here is a guy who's been playing really well lately. Give me Cameron Davis at 8,900. Over the last since the 3M Championship was back in July 23rd is when it ended. So his last 4 events, he's gone. I'll go from the Northern Trust back. He went 29th, 15th, 32nd, and 12th over his last 4.
Well.
Playing well for that price. Go ahead and sign me up for that. And then let me see here. Who would be my next? I got 3 guys right around the same. Yes. So we mentioned a guy who was getting his respect. Tyler Duncan's got moved up to 80. Was he 8,500 or 8,600? What was his exact price?
Tyler Duncan's 8,400.
8,400. Okay. So someone who has been right around the same range as Duncan all year and is more than $1,000 cheaper. Give me our boy. We talked about him all earlier with Steve Ball. Give me Taylor Gooch, 7,300.
I really am surprised that Taylor's that much further behind Tyler Duncan because, like you said, they've been within 200 or 300 of each other all year, and then just randomly this week, Duncan's 1,100 more expensive than Gooch.
It's not adding up to me, and like someone like Taylor at the BMW, we talked about before, he needed probably a top 5 finish to make it on the East Lake, so he's probably, you know, you got to push the gun a little bit more when you're in a situation like that. So finish 65th, but before that, finished 18th and 25th, the 2 events before that, 18th a couple weeks before at the 3M, only missed the PGA Championship cut by a stroke. Anything could happen on the weekend had he got 1 stroke lower. So, I mean, I mean, it's really just the value at this point. I mean, 7,300 in a weaker field for a guy who's such a great ball striker, and we just talked about swinging 75% with his driver, hitting his driver better, getting in play. It wouldn't surprise me if Taylor's in the top 10. If not, we talked about that breakthrough win coming through. This might be the opportunity.
Yeah, I feel like it's coming. I feel like at some point this fall we're going to be seeing him hoist a trophy, and that's my That's my actually fifth most expensive on DraftKings. So I'm right there with you with Taylor Gooch. And obviously we're kind of homers. We like to root for the guy, and he's easy to root for, a good dude. So
well, and obviously all that too. But I just like good ball strikers. I like good iron. Yes. Play. Good iron, yeah. Players hold up on if you take. Obviously, we talk about, we feel like driving's the most important because it's the start of everything, but I feel like a great iron game is what can travel the
most. Steve even said that Taylor said he's hitting his driver better.
Yeah.
If he starts driving the ball, watch out.
I mean, if he's going to start hitting two more fairways around like he's saying, he is going to be up there. That's not just blowing smoke at, but I mean, that's yeah. Legit facts.
Yeah, then he might not be at the BMW next year. He might be at East Lake next year if he starts hitting two more
will,
fairways
He
around.
Will be if that
yeah,
happens.
Yeah, absolutely. So he's my fifth most expensive. My fourth most expensive, a guy who's been playing really good golf and I feel like is another guy who's due for a breakthrough win at some point, is Mark Hubbard. Mark Hubbard, since the restart, no missed cuts. He does have one withdrawal, I think, at the Travelers, maybe, or maybe at the Rocket Mortgage. He had a WD, but 33rd, 37th, 12th, 72nd, 51st, 15th, 29th, 51st. He's playing good golf. He just, you know, he plays in these big fields, and he just can't keep up with some of these guys. This is a perfect week for Mark Hubbard. Short golf course, not a loaded field. So at 8,100, I like Mark Hubbard. So give us your last couple, Taylor.
Yes. So did you give your cheapest, or you still got your cheapest?
I still got my cheapest.
Okay. We'll save that for later. So I will go with my second most expensive here. A guy who hasn't played particularly a lot, but when he has, he's making cuts. Give me Wesley Bryan at 7,100. I
actually had him, and when I restructured my lineup, I had to take him out.
So yep. I don't have, I don't think he's played any of the web stuff since then. I need to go back and look on it. But from the PGA Tour starts he has right here in front of me, finished 33rd at the Wyndham, 21st at the Rocket Mortgage, and then the other two events. Since the restart, he has made the cut, 68th at RBC, and then 24th at the Traveler. So for 7,100, a weaker field, trying to find guys here who have a shot to get you to the weekend. Because the way I see it, Colby, like we mentioned, someone like Tyler Duncan has always had a great year at 8,400. I just don't see much difference between the guys in that range and guys down to 7,000, like the Taylor Gooches, the Wesley Bryans, and even my last pick here, who's at 7,000 exactly, another OSU boy who I've run with a lot of the weeks, Christoph Ventura. I mean, you know, I just don't see a lot of difference in that area of his game. So for Ventura, his last few events finished 37th at the Wyndham, finished 19th at the opposite field Barracuda. A couple weeks before that, finished 21st at the Rocket Mortgage, had finished, I believe, top 20, 25 in a couple of the Korn Ferry events that he played. Yeah, I actually had the correct sponsor that time, and I second-guessed myself. I about went from Korn Ferry to Webb because they keep changing on me. So that's my lineup right there. I feel like I got some good value. I just think it's one of those weeks, Colby, and I may be wrong. I just, with Siwoo Kim being the most expensive on DraftKings, and I obviously feel such a big name, but him being second most expensive, I just feel like it's a week to where if you try to go top heavy, it's just going to be tough to find. I would much rather go with a lot of these middle of the pack guys who I feel like are good value, as opposed to go with a top guy who is still somewhat of a wild card and then go down into the low 6,000 range. I just don't think this is the week to do something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so the reason I had to go away from 7,100, the guy you just picked, on tip of my tongue. Why can't I? Wesley Bryan. Bryan, yeah. The reason I had to go away from Wesley Bryan, so I had to drop down from 7,100 to 7,600 because I originally also had Joel Damon, and I wanted to go from Joel Damon to Brendan Steele because obviously Brendan Steele with the great course history here. So I needed to spend 500 more there, so I had to spend 500 less here. So to drop down from 7,100 to 6,600, I figured, you know what? Why not take a flyer on the guy who's won here recently? Maybe he's got some good memories. He sets foot on this golf course. It's going to be beautiful weather. It's going to be 85 degrees with 10-mile-an-hour southwest wind all 4 days in Napa. So give me Kevin Tway, who I realize is struggling right now. He's fighting his golf game a little bit. I'm hoping he finds some good memories at Napa and puts a good performance together this week. I figured he has a higher upside than any of those other guys at 6,600, considering he did win here 2 years ago. So those are our DraftKings lineups for this week at the Safeway. Did you already give your one and done pick?
No, I haven't. No.
You said you wanted to use Brendan Steele, but you used him for a $22,000 check at the Barracuda.
I don't even think it was that.
Yeah, maybe an $8,000 check at the Barracuda.
Something like that, which is great for Brendan Steele. It does not add up very much for a one and done pool. So for my one and done pick, Colby, I'll be honest with you. If I had fewer golfers left, I would consider saving him for next week because It's really hard. I just have some gut feeling that he's going to play really well next week at Wingfoot. Just, I don't know if it's because what happened back in 2006, whatever it may be. I thought about saving him, but just came off a win on Champions Tour. I'm riding him out. Give me Phil the thrill, baby.
Phil the thrill, okay.
And I'm telling you, boys, right now, unless I mean, obviously, my one and done pick has been the kiss of death a lot of times, but if Phil plays well this week, I mean, even if he just top 20s it, I think we're going to see some from him at Wingfoot. I think he's got that motivation. I think that's really what, since the corona and everything started, I think that's what he's been trying to peak his game for. I think that's one of the reasons why he did go play that Champions Tour event, since he didn't make it to Olympia Fields. And I think he has a lot of motivation. This is a course where he's had some pretty good success, missed the cut the last time he played here, but I believe other than that hasn't finished outside the top 20 or top 17, somewhere along those lines. So someone who I feel like is motivated and someone who just came off of a win. I know on the senior tour, but so many great players, like we mentioned all the time, went out there and won wire to wire. Really wasn't even a contest for a lot of it. So I'm going to ride out Phil, and it'll probably come back and kick me in the ass.
I don't think it will. I think Phil contends this week. I think on a golf course like this, I mean, he can hit bombs, not have to worry about a ton of trouble off the tee. The rough's not going to be real penalizing. He can reach all the par fives in two. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see Phil with a top five
finish.
Before
we hear your one and done pick, Colby, and we'll obviously get a lot more into it on our U.S. Open preview show, because next week's going to be really spectacular. But let me know, how do you like his chances at Wingfoot, bearing, you know, what we see this week?
I would say Phil has next to no chance at Wingfoot.
What do you say the baseline? I mean, I'm not saying he's going to hoist the trophy on Saturday. I'm saying, like, is he guaranteed missed cut?
I don't think he's guaranteed missed cut. I don't think he's guaranteed made cut either. I think he'll probably, if I had to guess, I'd say he'll make the cut and finish T47. Something like that.
I feel like, depending, let's see how he plays this week. And in our previous show, we might be able to get a Canes bet down on how Phil will finish. Okay. Because I am.
Well, you'll have to give me some time to think about the number before we set it at 47. And we got to see how he plays this week.
I gave you plenty of time to think about Tiger, and that was an easy winner. So,
well, that was an easy winner.
Also, another easy winner was our match yesterday. No, which
for the
talk
one
about.
And done pool, I've got Brendan Steele this week. Very boring pick this week in the one and done pool, running out Brendan Steele. 2-time winner at this event. Don't see any reason not to make it. A 3-time. Let me rip off my best bets this week, and then you can brag about the ass-kicking yesterday.
Are you using Brendan Steele in both pools?
I'm using Brendan Steele in both pools,
I'm using Phil in both pools.
You're using Phil
well.
In both? Okay, yeah. Good deal. So we got that taken care of and out of the way. Looking for some betting value, I like Phil and Brendan Steele. Phil's 20-1. Brendan Steele is 22-1. So those are kind of the guys I'm playing at the top of the board. And then I'm going to go down the board a little ways to find some other value. I don't usually bet Taylor Gooch because he's usually playing in stronger fields where I feel like even if he plays well, he's not really going to be able to win the golf tournament. I feel like if he plays well this week, he could win the golf tournament. And he's 70-1. I mean, 70-1. A guy who was just playing at BMW a couple of weeks ago. So Taylor Gooch at 70-1.
$10 bet gets you $700 back.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm all in on that. Another guy I've got in my DraftKings lineup, I'm putting 10 on Mark Hubbard this week at 55-1. I think Mark Hubbard is a guy who is due for a breakthrough win. So those are my four. And then I wanted to go find a super long shot because you just never know at a tournament like this. This is the tournament where somebody can just get hot and you just really need to take a super long shot and hope for the best. So for my super long shot, and I'm talking triple digits to one here, I'm going to go out and I'm going to go find me Harry Higgs at 100-1. Harry Higgs, good player, you know, played well a few weeks ago.
7,200 on DraftKings. I like him as a value there as well.
100-1? Bet 10 to win 1,000?
I mean, he finished, let me pull it up right here, Colby, finished 11th a couple back whenever we made the comment about how they show DJ and whoever the other golfers you mentioned, and then Harry Higgs. We had three distinctly different athletes out there on the television screen. But even after that, finished 56th last week at the BMW, so, you know, in a 70-man field, not necessarily what you want. But has shown some pretty good form over the last couple weeks. So I think, like I mentioned, Colby, I don't see a whole lot of difference in a DraftKings value between those top guys and the middle of the pack guys. So I really like him as a good value, and especially at 100-1. I mean, I've spent $10 on a lot stupider shit before.
Yeah. So those are my five bets this week. I just placed them, already ran them out. So got Phil and Brendan Steele at the top at 20 and 22-1. Mark Hubbard at 55-1. Taylor Gooch at 70-1, and then Harry Higgs at 100-1. That is my best bets for the week. And now, Taylor, if you would like to gloat, as we mentioned yesterday on the show, we had a 2-versus-2 golf outing yesterday afternoon with some buddies of ours, and it wasn't fun. Nobody enjoyed it.
It was spectacular.
The company was terrible.
It's going to be a lot more fun when I'm eating that Cane's and dipping it in the Cane sauce.
Just
and
really, really tough. Conditions
out tough. Really tough. Well, I mean, like I was telling you, I think we were on the fourth hole. Colby and the club almost slipped out of my hands from the sweat, and we're less than 24 hours ahead, and I'm in sweaters and long sleeve long johns.
Oh, we got off the course last night. So we got off the course, and it was 85 and sunny with a south wind. It took me about 25 minutes to get home. I got home. I walked out to get the mail. Wind had flipped. It was out of the north. It was like 62 degrees.
It was so cold.
It was cold after being out on the hot golf course all day. But yeah, we had the 2v2. It was combined score.
Total score.
And my damn partner three putted five times the first 10 holes. And we lost by five.
So to put in some context, Colby, he's listed as a 6 handicap.
My index is like 3.7. A 6 at the greens. Actually, I'm a 5 at the greens now, but my index is in the mid-3s.
Your index should be in the 1 point whatever, but that's for another story. And then Jack was number one man at Guthrie in high school, was really great player, but he has, well, how old is his baby now? 3 months old?
Four months old? Yeah, 3 and change. September 2nd, she was 3 months old, so.
So, needless to say, he's been a little busy here lately. So that would explain some of that. And then
if that's what happens to your feel when you have a kid, I don't want a kid.
Well, there you go. Now you got another reason to tell Dana
to postpone. He was lagging to like 12 to 15 feet.
And sometimes that was a good putt.
Yeah, he lagged it. His first putt to 9, he lagged it to like 20 feet.
And one hole he made like a 12-footer, or he would have had 6-3 putts.
For a second putt, yeah. Or he would have had a 6-3 putts the first 10 holes.
So he had been a little busy. And then my partner was our friend Matt, who... And what's funny, too, is that we scheduled this bet almost a year ago, if not over a year.
Probably more than that.
But back in the day, you know, we were both working a lot more than we are now. And then, obviously, Matt and Jack work, and then Jack had his kid. So this has literally been the first time where all three of us have been able to, or all four of us have been able to get together and play. And over the course of time, I would say that, you know, you've gotten a little bit better, but Matt's also gotten a little bit better. So it was fairly even matches, and needless to say, we didn't just beat y'all. We almost ran away with it. It was borderline ass beating.
Yeah, we lost by 5. So it was combined score. We played Lincoln West. I'm sure everybody who's listening is familiar with Lincoln West. Played it from the Blues. You shot 65. It's par 71. You shot 65. I shot 71. Jack shot 78. And Matt shot 79. So we were not near as close as we needed to be. Also, the hell out of here with your 65, with your chip-in eagle, with your cut slice on 17, thin blade to 12 feet, make the putt. Get out of here with that nonsense.
I had to hit it around a tree, dude. What
you did have to hit it around. It was a great shot.
I wasn't in the middle of the fairway.
It was a great shot. It was trash, too, though. But it was a great shot.
And
from the opposing team's perspective, it was trash.
Well, here's a little bit of funniness. So the hole after number 7 is where I chipped in for eagle. It was a pretty good chip in, may I say. And then the next hole, number 8, there's the road left, and we were into the wind. So I decided to hit shot I've been hitting lately is a little stinger tee shot, tee it probably about like you would a 3-wood or maybe a little higher than a 3-wood. Just hit a little low ball.
You had that one teed up extra low.
Yeah, I was trying to keep it low, keep it low, keep it out of the wind, and I cold-blooded topped it. It went about 40 yards.
I was going to say 50.
Let's put it this way.
You hit driver on your second shot, too.
I did, because it was in the rough and sitting up. You hit driver on your second shot on 7, and they gave me the idea to do it. It's just yours was a par 5, and mine was a par 4 under 400 yards.
anyway, it was a lot of fun.
Needless to say, we did have fun, and Colby already called it. He's turning into Tiger because he said the next match that we have will be at the green. So, like Tiger, lost at Shadow Creek. Now he has to get the second match at his home course for any chance to win.
Yeah, we're going to play at the greens. We're going to play at the greens. Matt's going to shoot 90. It's going to be a blast.
See, the thing is, I love Tiger so much, and I love you too, but Tiger wasn't as chicken shit, but what you're doing is chicken shit. Because the greens, you are a stud out there, and...
That's the home track.
It is, and those greens roll about like a 14 on the stint meter, and you putt
if
like...
If it gets windy out there...
You putt like Zach Johnson on those freaking
greens.
Dude,
if it gets windy out there, they roll fast, and it's just so different from what everyone else is used to playing, because everybody goes plays bent and they roll an 8, but I'm used to playing out there on great, not a 14, but an 11 or 12 legit.
And if you're downhill downwind, it's going to feel like a 14, I'm telling you.
Yes,
you
absolutely.
You can't stop it.
Yeah, and they're Bermuda, so they're hard, they're firm, chipping's different, run out on everything's different. You got to land shots, you know, even full wedges, you got to land 15 feet short to bounce forward.
Well, now that I get to thinking about
it. It's a very different game on those greens.
If my man Jack was three putting 5 times on Lincoln's greens, maybe we should go out to the greens. And maybe we might throw some 4 putts.
He was running 10 feet past on Lincoln's greens.
Man.
He'd be putting them off the green down the hill into the water.
Man, you might have talked me into it now.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun, but enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the good thing is that the greens, all the out of bounds is left, and my boy Matt does not hit it left.
No, never once in his life has Matt missed left. No. Yeah, exactly. So, good stuff. Everybody enjoy the Safeway. Go see Steve Ball, Ball Golf Center. They are the absolute
best around.
Best. Yep, 7501 North Robinson. Took my dad out there last week, and I'm telling you, it helped a ton. I took some of the stuff that I learned out there, and I'm helping my wife as well try to get rid of her slice and make divots, which it's so funny because she's never played golf, and she's like, oh, my gosh, it hurts your hands when you hit the ground. I'm like, well, until you get used to it and you start making good divots, it probably does, because I feel like what a lot of amateurs feel like is a divot is a chunk, and a chunk kind of does jostle your wrists around a little bit. But just a good divot doesn't.
Well, it's the difference in being, first of all, there's two things to it. One, it's the contact, because if you take a divot but it hits 3 inches behind the ball, it doesn't matter. And then the second part of it is the steepness of the divot, because if you take a divot and it goes 4 inches below the ground, it's not a good divot. And you're not hitting a good shot. So, you know, you need the old analogy was one to be about the size of a dollar bill. And that depends on the type of grass, too. Most divots would be smaller than that. But if you're playing on like a PGA Tour, like a Zoysia or anything like that, in Zoysia, you probably want to clip it a little bit more anyway, because it's almost on a tee. But if you're playing like flat bent, basically the rule of thumb is basically you want it to be about the size of a dollar bill, but about as thin as you can make it. So you want it to essentially be gliding over the turf. So definitely divots. If you don't make divots, you're not going to compress the ball. You're going to hit thin slices all the time. But you have to hit ball first, and you can't come in like you're chopping a piece of wood.
Yep, absolutely. All right, U.S. Open is next week. Can't wait. We'll preview the Safeway next week. We will recap the Safeway next week. But more importantly, we will preview the U.S. Open. Really looking forward to that at Wingfoot. Thanks for listening. Hit up the Ball Golf Center. We're back next week with more 73rd Hole.